for you. I've chosen another text. It's an alternative text for today, and I think you'll, by the end of the sermon, you'll see where I'm going. So I'm going to read this alternative text from Matthew, the slaughter of the innocents. Reactions? It's Christmas, right? What does the slaughter of the innocents have to do with the first Sunday of Christmas? Well, here's the text. Now after they left, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Get up and take this child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother by night, and went to Egypt, and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I have called my son." When Herod saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, he was infuriated, and he sent and killed all the children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had learned from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what had been spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, wailing and loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be consoled because there was no more. When Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up and take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who are seeking the child's life are dead." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was ruling over Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. And after being warned in a dream, he went away to the district of Galilee. There he made his home in a town named Nazareth, so that what had been spoken through the prophet might be fulfilled. He was called a Nazarene. So this is a real juxtaposition to Christmas, but it's part of the Christmas story that Herod was out to get this king who had been born a child, and he was in all of his paranoia and his furor, he was going to get this child. But before that could happen, an angel came and spoke to Joseph, said, "Go to Egypt. Go to safety to Egypt. Take Mary and the child, go to Egypt." And they were there for 2 years. So this is a story in the Christmas season about refugees and displaced persons. Joseph and Mary and Jesus were displaced from their home in Egypt for 2 years. So, three chapters here. First, I want to make a point that when we talk about displaced persons or refugees, they're not immigrants. Refugees are people who are cast out or driven from their home because of war or persecution or natural disaster. So Joseph and Mary and Jesus were victims of Herod and moved over to Egypt for 2 years. Now, this story has three parts, three chapters. First, they move over to Egypt for 2 years. We don't know too much about that except that they were there for 2 years. Then, the second chapter, well, and there's an Old Testament prophecy that's being fulfilled, that my son will be called out of Egypt. That came from Hosea. So the second chapter is that Herod sets his soldiers out to kill all of the newborns in and around Bethlehem. It's a genocide. He wants all of the babies who are just born, up to 2 years old, to be slaughtered because he wants Jesus. He's threatened by Jesus as the new king who could take his place. So then there's this other prophecy that's fulfilled out of Jeremiah. There will be weeping and wailing, and Rachel will be weeping over her children, from Jeremiah 31:15. The third chapter is that Herod dies. And through an angel, again, Joseph hears that it's safe to go back to Israel. So they move back to Israel, but on the way a second dream happens wherein Joseph is told in the dream, don't go back to Bethlehem in Judea. It's not safe there because Archelaus, the son of Herod, is out to get Jesus, the Christ child. So you have to go up to Nazareth in the northern part, up into Galilee. And again, that displaced them from their home. Now they're refugees in Nazareth. So that's the story, the backstory of this text. I'm from Hutchinson, Minnesota. In 1955, 56, our family moved to Hutchinson, Minnesota, and we joined Faith Lutheran Church. And some of the very first people I met at Faith Lutheran and Hutchinson were displaced persons. We call them DPs. There were five families, the Lindys, the Loguses, the Larmas, and there were four families, Lindys, Logus, Larma, and Dumpus. And out of those four families, there came the president of the Latvian Lutheran Church in America, Hans Dumpus, who's just now recently retired, the president of Bell Helicopters in Texas, Martin Dumpus, Iria Lagas, who danced with the New York Ballet. All of these kids that I grew up with went off and got PhDs and master's degrees. And they were all displaced persons from Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia. So what I've learned is that in 1948, Harry Truman took it upon himself to support a law that was in effect that was, for the first time, we could bring refugees into the United States, 1948. Now, interestingly, Lutheran immigration and refugee services began in 1939. Isn't that interesting? But in 1948, the Senate passed this law, which was the Displaced Persons Commission, which was a group of citizens. It wasn't a government organization. They were Lutheran Social Service and Catholic Charities. They had different names back then, but they were all the Lutherans and the Catholics getting together to support refugee resettlement. So there were some requirements. You had to come from a camp in Europe and be vetted. And then you also had to have a sponsor in the United States. So the sponsors were like Faith Lutheran Church in Hutchinson, providing homes and jobs. And one of the requirements was that this displaced person could not take the place of an American worker. So our people in our church found jobs and homes for these four families. The Lindys, the Loguses, the Dumpuses, and they're all names from Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. So by 1950, there were 200,000 people who were brought as refugees into the United States. And at that time, 1950, there were 7 to 10 million people in Europe who were displaced. Just think of that, 7 or 10 million after the Second World War. And we took in about 415,000 people between 1948 and 1952 as displaced persons, refugees. Now, 70% of those people came from the Soviet Union and from the Baltic states. And about 75% were families, like the families that I've tried to remember. And those people that were brought forward, 16% were Jewish. So a total, by 1952, there were 900 migrants who had come from Europe, and about half of those people were refugees. So some 500,000 people were immigrants, and then about 415,000 were refugees who had come into the United States. I find this very, very interesting that we have in our Lutheran tradition, we have actually been a part of that for all of this time. Lutheran immigration, refugee settlement, as well as Lutheran social service, Lutheran services across the United States. So what about today? I'm thinking about genocide, because Herod's act was an act of genocide, slaughtering all the two-year-olds and under in and around Bethlehem for no reason except that he was power-hungry. It's that underbelly of power that we live with even today. You think about Patrick and I have a friend named Anna. She's from Armenia. And through Anna, I have been I've learned that about 1.5 million people were slaughtered in Armenia in 1915. Then we go fast forward to 1933 and what happened. 1933 to 1945, at least 6 million Jews were exterminated by the Nazis. It's the world we live in. Unbelievable. Up to 11 million people lost their lives in Europe during the Second World War, and much of it was genocide. Then we move on to, well, let's say Darfur. We've got 500,000 people. Cambodia, 1975, 1.5 million people lost their lives in genocide. Rwanda, 1990, about 1.5 million, up to 3 million people in Rwanda lost their lives. Then we move fast forward to Berlin. 12 people, innocent people, murdered on the streets in the Christmas market in Berlin. The world we live in. Where's the good news? Where's Emmanuel? We think of Aleppo. 400,000 people have lost their lives in Aleppo. In this time, in the period that we're living in. Most of us as Americans don't relate to genocide, right? We don't relate to that. We expect that our government is going to protect us, right? We expect that it's safe for our children to be on the streets. We expect that we can walk anywhere in Carefree and Cave Creek without harm. But it's not that way in the rest of the world. The underbelly of power, the underbelly of power is sin. The absolute sin of human to human, struggling for power, killing innocent children, women, and others for the sake of power. So what do we think of that? Tragically and disappointingly, we're sitting here on the first Sunday of Christmas hearing about genocide. So where's the good news? Where's the good news? I'm thinking that we could draw some conclusions from Matthew. One of the conclusions that I've drawn is that you and I can pay attention to the children in our lives who are innocent. That's a big lesson from this gospel, that there are children who are homeless in Phoenix, right? There are 1 out of every 5 children born in the United States today, 1 out of every 5 children born in the United States is born into poverty. Born into poverty. Back in Minnesota, I met a guy named Marcus. I told you this story last time I preached, but I like to tell this story every time I preach, because it's sort of the core of who I am. It's what my values are surrounding. So Marcus came to us when he was 14 years old, said, "My mother says I can't be at home anymore." So he's on his bicycle with a backpack in January in Duluth. And he's got nowhere to go, because his mother has met a new boyfriend who says, "You, but not him." So the 14-year-old is out on his own and finds his way to the police, and the police bring him to Lutheran Social Service, and Lutheran Social Service provides housing for him for the next 5 years. And he graduated from high school in honors. And currently he's a student at the University of Minnesota Duluth in engineering. He's got his own apartment, a car, and a job. And he calls Lutheran Social Service his home. He has not seen his mother since the day she said, "You've got to go. Got a new boyfriend. Not room for you." Folks, that's going on all over the United States today. And we need to be reminded of this kind of thing during Christmas. Because what is Christmas all about, really? It's about the kids. What about the women who are abused in our society? Let's remember the people who are innocent and who cannot speak for themselves because of power, because of that underbelly of power that will have their way at any cost. So here we are listening to Joseph and his second conclusion I'm drawing from this gospel. Joseph is very, very attentive to the mother and the child. And Joseph listens to the dream. He listens to what the angels have to say to him. Go to safety. Listen to the voice. God is speaking to you. Go to safety. Have you heard angels? What are angels in your life? I believe I've heard angels many times. They're the messengers. In the Greek, angel means messenger. So who are the messengers in your life who have brought you to some kind of new ground, a new understanding of love and the gospel? Who are those messengers? Who are the angels who have spoken to you? That's the second conclusion that I would like to draw from Matthew. We can pay attention to Joseph, who was listening to God speaking through the messengers to take his family to safety. When we're looking for direction and we're looking for answers to the difficulties of our life, we too will receive messengers. We will receive those. We do, right? Paul is agreeing with me. How many people listen to messengers? How many people believe in angels? I believe in angels. You're angels to me. Just the fact that I've been welcomed into this congregation, you are the messengers from God bringing the good news to Richard Anderson. You're the angels. Take it in. So, one last conclusion. I'm going to ask our ushers to pass out a piece of paper. I'm giving you a little gift today. It's a poem. And, you know, when I think about this gospel and how it's juxtaposed to the happiness of Christmas and the joy of Christmas, angels announcing the glory of God, and then the wails and the weeping of out of Ramah, of Rachel weeping for her children. We put this juxtaposition together today on purpose, right? That the good news is that there is no darkness that will be, there is no darkness that will overcome the light of Christ. That's the good news. No darkness will ever overcome the light of Christ. So when my dad was dying, his name was Joe. Joe was my dad. He was dying at the age of 80. And a friend of his asked him, "So what's it like to be dying, Joe?" And my dad said to him, "God has not let me down so far, and I don't think he's going to let me down now." That's the gospel for today. God is not going to let us down, no matter what's going on in the world, no matter how difficult it's going to be in your life. You have a promise that Christ the Lord is going to reign in your life and be your Savior. There is no darkness that will overcome that light. That's the message for today. God with us, Emmanuel, despite all of the difficulties that we face in this world, the genocide of this world, Christ will rule over Herod and over all of the despots that will ever come to be in this world of ours. Jesus is Lord. Christ is risen. Christ is the child that came into the world to save all of us. So here's the poem. You have it in your hand. Take this with you today. Read it for the rest of the week. Consider what we've talked about today. God did not wait till the world was ready. God did not wait for the perfect time. God did not wait till hearts were pure. We cannot wait till the world is sane to raise our songs with joyful voice. For to share our grief, to touch our pain, God came with love. Rejoice, rejoice. Amen.